Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. My name is Matt, your host, and we're going to be here live for the next 58 minutes. And again, as always, I'm excited and I'm stoked to be here today. We have a lot going on. If you want to make contact with us, which you probably will in the studio here today, you can call 254-773-1400, 254-773-1400. Emails aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to our website at aaronsgunshop.com. That's AARONS gunshop.com. You can sign up for my classes. I have a class today. It's overbooked. I have an overflow class on Monday, this upcoming Monday at 4 p.m. if you wish to participate in that class. Okay, let's move on. We're going to go to our NRA section. And in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It depends on the story. And like I keep preaching, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one. The more gun supporters for the NRA there is, the more power they have in numbers to stop bad legislation. Doesn't matter if they do things wrong here and there. The bottom line is the NRA is a force to be reckoned with, and politicians know it. So if we put the pressure on them, hopefully they will continue to do good things instead of bad when it comes to our gun rights and gun laws. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read three stories, like I said. The first one here, actually, they're all going to be coming out of December 2002. And the first one reads as follows. A Kent, Washington jewelry store owner decided he'd had enough and wasn't going to take it anymore. Chuck Homer waited on a customer one Friday for about an hour and a half. I'm sorry, for about half an hour, when the man said he'd be back Saturday to make a purchase. When the man returned the next day, the jeweler opened the secure door to let him in. Then the man pulled a revolver and forced Homer to the back of the store, where he tied him up with plastic ties and made him lie face down on the floor. Quote, a pretty vulnerable feeling, he said. Homer said, my life was really on the line. The jeweler was able to get his hands free, but waited until the robber was occupied pulling merchandise from the showcase. Then Homer sprang into action, jumping to his feet, grabbing a shotgun, and firing at the robber. The suspect fired four shots at Homer, but the owner wasn't injured. I just started letting loose toward the door as the crook made his way toward the exit, Homer recounted. Cock it, shoot it, then take a few steps. The robber escaped, but may have been injured. Homer said he was scared, but could not just lie there. I come from the old school that says you take care of your family, your property, your neighbors, and your country. Now, here's my commentary on that story. Number one, this one is difficult for me. And here's why. I personally have come to learn that escape is best done immediately. The more you are restrained or put into a more secured area, the chance of escaping is greatly reduced. So I may have confronted the robber sooner. I don't know. That's me. That's the type of guy I am. I don't deal with these things well if you're going to mess with me. So I'm not saying do that. I'm just saying that's me. So I have a problem with that part of the story. Now, comment number two. The funny part about this story to me is the aftermath. I'm just picturing this man's shop after shooting a shotgun multiple times in close quarters. It must have been extremely messy. I mean, if you see what a shotgun can do and he's just pumping round after round, I can just imagine what his walls look like. Okay, let's go to story number two. Once again, from December 2002. Excuse me. An 89-year-old Rochester, New York man shot and killed an intruder who broke into his home in an apparent burglary attempt. Alfred Thompson said he was watching television early one morning when he heard someone break in through a side door. He saw the man's silhouette in the darkened kitchen and fired a .22 caliber gun twice, hitting the man in the chest. Thompson said the two exchanged no words, but the intruder seemed wild, as if he was on drugs. Thompson added that he was fearful for his safety. Now, my commentary. This guy, Alfred Thompson, he's calm, cool, collected, and politically correct. I picture this guy in an easy chair watching TV with his gun in his hand, right? Bad guy breaks in. Alfred hears it, looks, identifies, fears for his life, stops the intruder. I can just picture him sitting on the easy chair, sees it, swings his arm over to the left or the right, whatever direction it is, tapping two rounds, boom, deal's done. So he stops the intruder. So bravo, old man, bravo. Story number three. December 2002. Pompano Beach, Florida. City Commissioner Lamar Fisher, his wife, and two children were awakened when they heard the sounds of glass shattering. Grabbing his handgun, Fisher went to investigate and discovered a man in his underwear trying to enter the living room through a window. Fisher tried to push the intruder out the window with a TV tray, but the man would not be deterred. During the struggle, Fisher fired a shot at the man. When sheriff's deputies arrived in response to Mrs. Fisher's call, it took three officers to arrest the man, who turned out to be Fisher's neighbor, John Francis Laughlin. Records show Laughlin had two prior arrests on drug-related charges. Ladies and gentlemen, my commentary. Number one, man hears break-in, man grabs gun. Very good. No hesitation there. Very good. Number two, intruder wearing underwear. What is it with these crooks, either in their underwear or naked? I don't get it. A lot of these stories are like that. I've been reading stories here for, what, 6 months now? And I think every other week I got a guy, he's either naked, in his underwear, or doing something weird to a dog. I don't know. Number three, the guy is his neighbor. I've read a handful of those, too. That's why I like people, but I just don't like neighbors. I mean, I don't know what's going on around here, but that's just weird stuff going on. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's three stories from the NRA. Glean from it what you can. Now, we're right on schedule. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick one-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to go over my PEP section, Preparedness Eliminates Panic. It's going to be kind of interesting. You're going to have to follow me on this one, and hopefully we'll get something out of it. But we'll see you on the other side in about a minute and 10.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, today's December 12th, 2015, and we're moving right along. We're in our next section here, PEP section, Preparedness Eliminates Panic, or Practice Eliminates Panic. Today, it's going to be preparation. We're going to be prepping your mind. Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you how important, how critical it is to have the proper mindset. If you don't have the proper mindset, you're lost. You're going to lose it. You're going to lose, period. Okay? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Tomorrow, I have an all-day seminar, and one of the first things I talk about is mindset, being ready and geared up. Well, one of the things I talk about is being prepared to be able to handle the person who wants to hurt you. The person who wants to hurt you has a mindset already. And understanding people of that position in a power trip, a bully, on drugs or something, you got to get out of this element of, oh, it's not going to happen to me. Or, well, it'll happen to my neighbor. Or it's not going to be as severe as people think. Or I can handle it. I don't need to bring my gun today. You know, people tell me, oh, I carry a gun to defend myself. Then why is it 90% of the time at your house? I mean, what good is it? Is the bad person going to determine when you got the gun and then he'll attack you? No, he's going to do it at his convenience. So what I've done here, and what I have done a lot in years because I want to learn and master the mind, is I study Nazi torture. I actually go read stories. I look at pictures to see what a human being can do to another human being. And it's not pretty, everybody. A human being can do terrible, disgusting things to another person. And we're getting to a point in society, in this world, where people out there, they're sick, they're crazy, and they want to hurt you. And if you're sitting there and you're listening to me and you're one of the types who go, oh, it's not going to happen to me, or, oh, you're just hyping it up, well, you're an idiot, okay? Because there's three types of people. I keep telling you this. There's the informed who sit there and do absolutely nothing, which just in my book, you're worthless. Or you're informed, and you do something. And what does it mean by doing something? I don't know. Talk to somebody. Write a letter. Hand out flyers. Do something. But what good is retaining the information and not sharing it? It doesn't do any good for anybody. So I'm going to read to you. I want to give you an idea of what humans can do to other humans. I pulled this off of topsecretwriters.com. I was just flipping through, and I happened to see this. It was all written down. It was easy for me. It was just eight things, and I could read it quick on the radio. The headline is, Eight Worst Nazi Human Experiments You Never Knew About. This is from Benjamin Jones. Some of them can be kind of gross. Despite the obvious evils that Nazis inflicted on the world, behind closed doors, doctors and scientists were conducting some of the most abhorrent, disturbing experiments of human subjects. According to Nova, there were 30 such Nazi human experiments performed on concentration camp prisoners. The result was unimaginable pain, mutilation, disability, and ultimately death. During the Nuremberg doctor trials, 15 of 23 defendants were found guilty of unthinkable war crimes. Here's a list of the most shocking and evil experiments that you may not have ever heard about. Number one, freezing. Nazi doctors submerged victims in vats of icy water for periods up to 5 hours in an attempt to find ways to treat German pilots forced to eject into icy ocean water. The victims were either naked or dressed in aviator suits and submerged in water. Others were taken outside into freezing cold and strapped down naked. And don't tell me, well, it was for science to help other people live. Screw that. You got twisted thinking on that one, if you're thinking like that. Number two, twins. The infamous Dr. Joseph Mengele experimented on twins in an effort to learn the secrets of multiple births and to find a way to quickly multiply the German race. Mengele's experiments were performed on prisoners in Auschwitz. He experimented on 1,000 pairs of twins, and roughly 200 survived those experiments. When twins were of no more use to Mengele, he dispatched subjects with an injection of chloroform straight into the heart. Number three, tuberculosis. Other Nazi doctors wanted to see if some people had a natural immunity to tuberculosis in order to develop a vaccine. Dr. Kurt Heismeier injected the tuberculosis bacteria directly into the lungs of his victim at the Neuengamme concentration camp. He was responsible for the deaths of at least 200 people. Number four, phosgene gas. Nazis subjected 52 concentration camp prisoners to phosgene gas in an attempt to find an antidote to the compound. That gas was used as a biological weapon during World War I. The Nazis intentionally exposed victims to the gas, causing unbearable irritation to the lungs. Many prisoners, already malnutrition and weak, suffered further complications after the experimental exposure, and four died. This one's gross coming up. Get ready. Number five, transplant experiments. The Nazis wanted to know if the person's joints and limbs could be removed and transplanted into someone else. These cruel experiments led to scores of concentrate camp prisoners having limbs needlessly amputated. Every attempt to transplant a limb or joint was a failure. Many were killed, mutilated, and exposed to excruciating pain. Sections of muscle, bone, and nerves were also removed in fruitless attempts to regenerate those body parts. Number six, seawater. Infamous Dr. Hans Eppinger tried to make seawater drinkable but failed. Scientists forced about 90 gypsies to drink only seawater and deprived them of all food and fresh water. The victims reportedly licked a freshly mopped floor just to get a small amount of fresh water. Serious bodily injury resulted from these horrible experiments. Number seven, the Nazis also used poison to torture and kill inmates. At the Buchenwald concentration camp, Russian prisoners were injected with experimental poisons as scientists worked to develop new methods of execution. One was a combination of phenol and cyanide. Other experiments included adding toxic chemicals to food and shooting prisoners with poison bullets. Those who didn't die during the experiment were murdered so that the autopsy could determine what impact the poison actually had. And ladies, this one's for you. Artificial insemination. The notorious Heinrich Himmler himself ordered a Nazi doctor to artificially inseminate concentration camp prisoners through various experimental methods. Dr. Karl Klauberg artificially inseminated about 300 women at Auschwitz who were strapped down and taunted mercilessly. Klauberg told his victims that he had used animal sperm to create a monster inside them. Ladies, that's eight things that people can do to other people. All right? Now, I'm not done yet. I want to show you who these people are. In a nutshell, what do you do when a bully messes with you? You got two choices. You either succumb to their demands or you punch them in the freaking nose. And you know what happens when you punch them in the nose? They back off. So let's read a little here. The sentencing and execution of Nazi war criminals, 1946. I've got a few minutes here. I'm going to read it, so stand by. This is from eyewitnesstohistory.com. In November 1945, 21 men sat in front of a dock Nuremberg courtroom on the trial for their lives. The group represented the cream of the crop of the Nazi leadership, including Hermann Göring, Hitler's heir apparent until falling out in favor of the closing days of the war, and Rudolf Hess. Rudolf Hess, I actually guarded at Spandau Prison in Berlin, Germany. That was pretty interesting. Hitler's deputy, who had been in custody since parachuting to England in 1941. Each defendant was accused of one or more of four charges: conspiracy to commit crimes alleged in other counts, crimes against peace, war crimes, or crimes against humanity. Specific charges included the murder of 6 million Jews, pursuing an aggressive war, the brutality of concentration camps, and the use of slave labor. The defendants all proclaimed their innocence, many declaring that they were just following orders. Now, the verdicts were announced on October 1st, 1946. 18 of the defendants were found guilty, while 3 were acquitted. 11 of the guilty were sentenced to death by hanging. The remainder were in prison from 10 years to life. Now that we had that set up, this is what I find interesting. Dr. G.M. Gilbert was a prison psychologist assigned to the responsibility of monitoring the behavior of the defendants while they stood trial. He became intimately familiar with all the defendants and was present when each one was escorted from the courtroom to their prison cell after hearing the verdict. His description of each individual reaction provides insight. That's what I'm studying for, insight. Why do people do these things? Of the mindset of the Nazi hierarchy. Here are a few of the observations. This one's about Göring. You know who Göring is? He was in charge of the Air Force, German Air Force. He came down first and strode into his cell, his face pale and frozen, his eyes popping. "Death," he said, as he dropped on the cot and reached for a book. His hands were trembling in spite of his attempt to be nonchalant. His eyes were moist, and he was panting, fighting back an emotional breakdown. He asked me in an unsteady voice to leave him alone for a while. When Göring collected himself enough to talk, he said that he had naturally expected the death penalty and was glad that he had not been given a life sentence, because those who are sentenced to life imprisonment never become martyrs. But there wasn't any of the old confident bravado in his voice. Göring seemed to realize at last that there is nothing funny about death when you're the one who's going to die. So here you have a person in power, doesn't understand, is merciless, he doesn't care about people, allowing atrocities to happen. But now you see how they break down, they crumble. That's why I'm saying, what do you do with a bully? You punch him in the freaking nose. Let's go to the next one. We got Rittentrop. Rittentrop was foreign minister of the Nazi Germany from 1938 to 45. Rittentrop wandered in, aghast, and started to walk around the cell in a daze, whispering, "Death, death. Now I won't be able to write my beautiful memoirs. Tis, tis, so much hatred, tis, tis." Then he sat down and completely broken man and stared into space. So here we have another person, put in a position of power, willing to do atrocities to others, but he crumbles because we punched him in the nose. German Field Marshal Keitel was already in his cell, his back to the door when I entered. He wheeled around and snapped to attention at the far end of the cell, his fist clenched and his arm rigid, horror in his eyes. "Death by hanging," he announced, his voice hoarse with intense shame. "That, at least, I thought would be spared. I don't blame you for standing at a distance from a man sentenced to death by hanging. I understand that perfectly, but I am still the same man as before. But the guy, he's done atrocities as well, or allowed them to happen, and here he faces death and he realizes there's no place to go. We punched him in the nose." Last one. Alfred Jodl, chief of the operations staff of the Armed Forces High Command, marched into his cell, rigid and upright, avoiding my glance. After he had been unhandcuffed and faced me in his cell, he hesitated a few seconds, as if he could not get the words out. His face was spotted red with vascular tension. "Death by hanging. That, at least, I did not deserve. The death part. All right, somebody has to stand for responsibility." But that, his mouth quivered and his voice choked for the first time. "That I did not deserve." Ladies and gentlemen, I read all that for the reasons I just told you. You must understand the mind of evil people. They don't care about you. You must be on guard. You must be ready. Have your mind prepared and have your body ready and have your skills at hand. If they're skills at arms, or if they're judo, karate, whatever it is to defend yourself, have it at the ready. I have a couple more minutes. I want to read you something I thought was pretty interesting here. I like it a lot. Texas sheriff urges residents to arm themselves amid gun control push. This is posted by Hugh Springs County Sheriff Randy Kennedy. Quote, if you try to disarm us, sir, and he's talking to the president, then you will cause a revolution in this country to occur. A sheriff in Northeast Texas is the latest local law enforcement personality to urge the public to take up firearms in self-defense. Responding to Obama's rare Oval Office address Sunday, in which the president expressed a desire to curtail American gun rights, Hughes Spring County Sheriff Randy Kennedy uploaded a video commentary to Facebook defending law-abiding gun owners. I know that there are a lot of law-abiding gun owners out there, and nobody who is a legal gun owner has ever wanted to harm or kill anyone, Sheriff Kennedy said. But I know that we do not seek to harm or kill anyone, but nor are we going to allow anyone to seek us out and kill us or do harm to our families. So, I strongly encourage you to help me by arming yourselves, because I know that we as law enforcement do the very best we can to protect our citizens, and we do a good job, the sheriff continued. Sheriff Kennedy added that armed citizens are essential not only to protecting their families, but to saving law enforcement lives as well. I know that if the tables are ever turned on me or one of my officers, that I want one of my citizens or a group of my citizens coming to our aid and rescue. And I don't want you running out of bullets, and I don't want you running out of guns before you're able to pull our bacon out of the fire. Ladies and gentlemen, if you hear my voice and you're in a different county, whatever county you're in, you need to talk to your sheriff. You need to make sure he's got a good plan. I know I've talked to a couple sheriffs, and I know they got a good attitude, just like this gentleman does. But if you're in a county and they don't, you need to talk to them. You need to put pressure on them. You need to make them say that they are going to protect us. They're not going to do anything that is against constitutional rights. And that's my attitude, and I'm sticking with it. But what we're going to do now, I'm going to stop now. We're going to take a break for about a minute. When we come back, I'm going to bring on to the show here my special guest, David Tatum. We're going to be going over a unique gun part for 1911s. And I think you're going to enjoy it a lot, and you'll get a lot out of it. So we'll come back in about a minute, 10.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. Aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, it's December 12th, 2015. I want to give you some idea of what's coming up here in the near future. Today, we've got our class at 2:30. It's overloaded and packed because we have a special going on. Anybody who's taken a concealed carry class from me gets to take $60 off the upcoming seminar, which I'll be talking about in a second. So that one's full. But our overflow class, if you sign up for the overflow class, I will still honor the discount rate for the December 13th class. You'll be able to take $60 off the price of that class. But the Monday class at 4 o'clock, 4 to 9 p.m. So if you want to sign up for that, you can either call or send me an email. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, and you can go to the CHL page and sign up there. Now, we have an updated special on our calendars. We have our open carry calendars celebrating open carry coming January 1st. There are now three packs for $25 a pack. You still have time to buy some. We'll be at the gun show with a whole bunch of them with ribbons on them and everything. You can buy them as gifts, hand them out to all your liberal friends, really get them upset. So get them now while they last. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, the radio page, and purchase them there. Or you can link up with us at the gun show, the real gun show at the Bell County Expo Center next Saturday and Sunday. They're great Christmas gifts, so hurry up and buy as many as you can. It also, the purchase of those calendars helped to keep the show on the air. Don't forget about Aaron's holiday gun buying special going on at the gallery gun page on my website, aaronsgunshop.com. All guns are at cost plus $30 handling charge. So whatever the price, $200 or $2,000, doesn't matter. You pay the cost plus a $30 handling charge. That's it. Now, on December 13th, that's this Sunday. That's tomorrow. There's still room. That's Sunday, and I will be doing my this year's final home invasion self-defense seminar. The class is $165. Unless you've already been a student of mine, I'll take $60 off that price. That's a Christmas gift from me to you. So sign up quickly. There is limited seating, but there are a couple seats still available. And finally, well, actually, let me read to you real quick what's in that program. You're going to go over mindset and philosophy, gun safety and handling, reloads, empty and tactical, weak hand reloads, point shooting, drawing from concealment. We'll touch on that. Handgun round robins, phenomenal way to learn. Weak hand shooting, room clearing, law enforcement aspects, student scenarios, live fire shooting drills, knives, lights, lasers, hand and arm signals, and we'll go over a lot of nice little things you want to have. And finally, don't forget, the deadline is in for the Man of the Year contest. We've got Patty, one of my consultants, she's reviewing all the entries, and we're going to probably find out by Wednesday and announce to the person on the 19th at the live show at the Bell County Expo Center who the winner of the Man of the Year program is, so stay tuned for that. Okay, with no further ado, everybody, I want to introduce you now. I want to bring here David Tatum into screen. He's coming on screen now. I've known David for a while here, and he's come up with some neat stuff, and I wanted to bring him on the show and introduce him and have him talk to you about the kind of part that he's got. But, David, because we got you on, I saw you and got it on real quick here. I didn't get a chance to get a bio from you. Is there anything you'd like to say? You know, say hi, but give us an idea of who you are, what you do, and what's going on in your life.
Well, long story short, my parents or my dad was self-employed pretty much all his life, and I grew up the same way. Basically, if it's broke, fix it. You know, so I always worked my own trucks, did my own carpentry work, and when I got into firearms or repairing firearms, it was kind of the same thing. If something you don't like, find a way to fix it.
There you go. You sound like your dad, man.
Right.
Everybody, if you don't know, Con is David's dad, so that's cool. We have it in the family. That's pretty good. All right, well, I'll tell you what, David. I saw you in a parking lot one day, and you were telling me about this part, and I was kind of in a rush, and I didn't have a chance to really thoroughly go through my brain, and then I saw you a couple more times, and we talked about it a little bit further, and I got a better understanding of it, and I wanted to get you on the show to explain it. Why don't you tell me, first of all, what you have, the part that you have, what it's called, and where does it go, what does it do, and what gun specifically is it made for?
Okay. What we have is a newly designed, patented, ambidextrous thumb safety for the 1911 handguns. Developed because most 1911s, when they are equipped with an ambidextrous safety, those safeties tend to get real spongy. The gun was not designed to be ambidextrous. So we came up with a safety that was stronger, had more structural rigidity to it. Had to make a minor modification to the receiver to be able to accomplish this. But when you do that, you add a lot of strength to that safety, and you take a lot of that slop and wobble out.
Let's do this. Now, everybody, when you're listening to this, if you're into this type of gun, and if you're not and you want to learn, there's going to be a video up probably Monday of this segment here. You should watch it because we're going to be showing some things up on the screen. So what I want to do first is just show you a standard 1911. Once you see it, you're going to, that's a 1911. And if you'll notice, if you're holding the gun in your shooting hand on the left side of the gun towards the rear and the hammer, there's a lever on the side. That's the safety we're talking about. And why would somebody want an ambidextrous safety? And here's two reasons. One, I'm a left-handed shooter. I would manipulate the safety with my thumb, but there's none on the right side of the gun as I'm looking at it. Or, if I'm a right-handed shooter and I get injured and I need to be able to switch hands, it'd be nice to have an ambidextrous safety. So that's where David's part is coming in very handy here. Go ahead. And you said the standard part is not built the way it should as compared to yours. Explain that again.
Well, keep it in mind, the 1911 was designed in 1911. And in 1911, if you're left-handed, well, sucks to be you. So we had to make a modification to the receiver that would actually make the gun truly conducive with left-handed or ambidextrous use. Okay, so we did make a very minor modification. And if you can see here on the video, there's just a very small hole we put in this side of the receiver that basically matches the original hole. But what it does is it allows us...
There is no hole on that side. You actually added.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. We added that hole there. But what it does is it allows us to run a secondary pin all the way through the receiver. Now you have two locking points that really stabilizes that safety, and you take all that wobble out of it.
Use that screen for me. Show them the difference between a generic ambidextrous safety and the weak spot and how yours overcomes that weak spot.
Okay. If you can see it, the only thing that actually holds this safety one side to the other is this split pin here on the bottom.
So if I use my finger, if you can't see it on the screen, I'll use my hands. One piece has got a split, and the other side comes into that split, and one twists the other. So you have a tendency to want to wallow it out with use. Okay?
Exactly. And that's the only thing that actually holds one side to the other. On ours, we extended the sear engagement part and ran a secondary pin all the way through the receiver. And that takes almost all of the resistance and the over-travel torquing out of that split pin. So you don't have a metal fatigue build up there that's going to create slop and wobble inside your safety.
So instead of this one, like I showed you before, this one piece, now there's a secondary one in the back that connects, so it keeps it stable. So instead of it just wallowing out, you got two pieces and it moves like that. Is that correct?
Exactly right.
Very good. I can see how it works. Now, who do you think would benefit from that the most? Probably
I designed it as a practical thing for people that you don't know what kind of scenario you're talking about. You're always talking about be ready. Okay, well, this is one of those things. It doesn't have to be a Holocaust situation. You break your thumb playing basketball, you need to make a shot left-handed. That's a major plus. But the biggest thing to this, as opposed to other safeties, is somebody who is really using that handgun. Competitive shooters especially shoot a lot of left-handed, a lot of tactical individuals, military, law enforcement. People who are really working that safety.
This is big on that. This is very big because I was talking to him before we went on air about how I've got, 1911s is my gun. I love it. But I'm gentle with it. I'm not in a tactical scenario. I'm going to use it for self-defense, so I may not use it as much. And I'm well aware of the mechanics of the gun, and I treat it with proper respect. But what he's talking about here is absolutely, you're going to be engaging it hard, so I can see very much where that part comes into play. So if you're a competition shooter, if you're a tactical operator, you really need to check out this video. David, how can they contact you?
The easiest way is get a hold of or look at our website, www.tatumtactical.com. That's got all my contact information on there. You can look at the safety. You can see how it engages all the different aspects of it. And contact information is there. You can call me or email me.
Say it again. Say it again and spell it out for everybody.
Okay, it's www.tatumtactical.com.
And Tatum is T-A-T?
T-A-T-U-M.
Tactical.
T-A-C.
No, you don't have to spell that, but it's T-A-T-U-M-tactical.com. Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. All right, and they can find out all these parts. Now, you've got this one here on your 1911, and it can fit any gun, because everybody, correct me if I'm wrong, all 1911s from the trigger guard all the way across to where the hammer is, all the mechanisms are the same. Nothing changes. So it can go on any size gun, a 3-inch barrel, 3.5-inch, 4-inch commander barrels, 5-inch barrels, long slides, it doesn't matter, because all the working mechanisms of that 1911 are the same. So nobody has to worry about it. Now, where can they take their gun to get it modified?
Really, any competent gunsmith can do it. And if they have any questions, they can contact me directly. we have several custom builders that are doing installations. Mitchell Custom Guns out in Breckenridge, for example, he's installed these safeties into single-stack 1911s, everything from the smallest compact up to full-size 2011 STI competition pistols. I mean, you can put the safety in virtually any 1911. Really, for a competent gunsmith, it's a pretty simple operation, and really just about any competent gunsmith can do it. I do all my own work.
Can people come to you, or you can't do that?
Technically, I'm not licensed as a manufacturer or gunsmith, so I don't do those,
okay.
But we do work with other gunsmiths in the area that do that for us.
Now, everybody, let me make a comment here, too. Ambidextrous safeties are very important for another reason, too, because if you're a left-handed shooter, there's certain things that go on when shooting this gun, and we were talking about this, too, David, before we went on air. But if you'll notice here, we got this beautiful gun that Sean McVicker did for me, absolutely beautiful. We'll be talking about that another show. But I'm a left-handed shooter, and if the hammer is cocked, if the hammer's not cocked, if the hammer's down, I don't need to put the safety on. But as a left-handed shooter, if it's a normal gun and it doesn't have an ambidextrous safety, I've got to cock the hammer, then I got to push the safety down, and it's just backwards. I don't want to go against the flow. When it comes out of my holster, I'd have to cock the hammer, then pull the trigger. It's two different opposite directions. Whereas with an ambidextrous safety being left-handed, I got the safety on. As the weapon comes out of the holster and I'm going forward, my thumb is pushing forward the safety off in that position. So if you're going to be doing that, you're going to want one for sure, ambidextrous safety. And this product that David has here, if you're going to be doing it a lot, It's going to be an excellent product to put on your gun for stability and not to wear out or wallow out. Because he's right. This piece here, once again, the standard piece has one bar that goes all the way across. It's split like that, and she'll wallow out. David's part has two bars. They attach to each other, and it's rock solid. Instead of it going one piece, it's got a secondary piece here, and it rocks like this. If you can see that, I'm going back and forth. You just have to check out the video. David, is there anything else you want to say that we're missing here?
I think we pretty much covered it. It's a fully CNC part, machined out of cold-rolled stainless steel. We do make some carbon steel, too, as well, for making blued safeties, stuff like that. But it's top-quality manufactured out of top-quality material. So,
now, I had another gun, another 1911, that I liked minimal bulk. Mm-hmm. Type of ambidextrous safeties. Do you have that type of product as well? And what I mean by minimal bulk, it doesn't the lever does not extend out that long. It's just a little piece, just enough to get your finger on it to do it, and it doesn't get in the way of things.
We do. I actually modified one for there's a fantastic gunsmith out of Nevada. His name is Terry Tussey. He was voted Pistol Smith of the Year, actually. And I modified one of these for him to actually be a left-handed only single-sided safety. We're that confident in...
How do you like that, right-handed shooters?
Exactly right. But we're confident enough in this safety that we'll go ahead and modify this if you want to. We'll cut off pads or we'll narrow them, whatever you like. But it's one of the only safeties out there, if not the only safety out there, that it's truly strong enough that you can make it a single-sided safety, left hand only, and manipulate that thing without having to worry about it giving up on you.
That's a pretty interesting concept. I'd like to look at that. Are you able to give prices, or is it too much of a variable to give a general price range of what it would take for somebody to install one of these things? And once again, it's called the Rock Lock Ambi Safety, but is there any boundaries of what it costs to do this?
Well, the retail price on these is $150.
Okay.
Okay. Installation will depend on who you get to do it.
And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something on the price. I've bought many ambidextrous safeties, and they're not cheap, okay? And we just discussed how they can wear out. So what you're looking at here, and I'm looking at the product up close and personal, is well-made, and the price is appropriate. So,
well, what's so significant about this is I recently talked to a man who is a left-handed competitive shooter. Before my safety, he put five safeties in one gun. They kept breaking.
Out.
Yeah, he wore them out. He broke them. The last one broke on him at the national finals competition. Okay, so you get right there to the top tier and your gun gives up. That's not a good feeling. Okay, but he put five safeties in one gun before he met us.
Wow, I bet you he loves you now.
Hadn't broke one yet.
Okay. All right, 30 seconds. Any final words?
Well, we would love to get this product out there for people who can use it, people that need it, especially people in competition or tactical. That's who we built it for, is people that rely on their sidearm.
Okay, once again, give us your website that people can go check it out.
TatumTactical.com.
Tatum Tactical, TATUM Tactical.com. David, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it. And what we're going to do now, Paul, we're going to take a quick one-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to be going over a product demo from Blackjack Firearms. So today's a day of product demos, everybody. There's going to be another good one coming up. So we'll see you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. I'm Matt, your host. We're here now at the product spotlight from Blackjack Firearms. This right here, if you can see in the video, AR pistol will be highlighted at the Real Gun Show in Belton, Texas on the 19th and 20th. That's next week's show. Now, if no problems arise, we're going to be doing a live show there. And Blackjack Firearms will be there at the table with us. And we're going to, you know, he'll have a whole bunch of other goodies as well. But we're going to be having this gun here with another laser pistol. And we're going to be setting up a laser range. So you're going to be able to put your hands on this butte, get an idea of how it feels, and actually do some shooting on my laser system that'll show you how fast you're shooting, where your shots are going. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So let me break down. This is a product here from Blackjack Firearms. And once again, let me hear everybody. What do we do when we get a firearm? What's the first thing we do? That's right. We check to make sure it's not loaded. Take the mag out. Mag is empty. This, however, does not have a bolt in it. It's got a laser bolt, so I cannot manipulate like a real one. So we know there's nothing in there. It can't work. But I got the weapon on safe as well. I'm going to put the magazine back in for aesthetics. And let me tell you a little bit about this AR pistol. This is a model R1 AR pistol made by Blackjack Firearms. And if you want, you can go to bjfirearms.biz and check this one or other one. I don't know if this one's actually on there, if he's got a picture of it yet. He just built it real quick for me. But he's got a whole bunch of other things. BJFirearms.biz. Go check it out, all the different things that he has to offer there. Now, let's see here. We've got a lot to offer on this particular. This is a basic model, to be honest with you, but the basic model's got a lot of nice stuff to it. It's 5.56. It's got a UTG railed gas block right here, so you can. It's optic ready, basically. Put your front sight, your flip-ups, whatever you want. It's a standard model. It's got the standard pistol grip. It's got the phosphate coated upper, the black upper. And the standard bolt carrier group for Blackjack Firearms, they've gone to their standard is nickel boron bolt carrier groups. And I've talked to you about that before in some other shows. It's slicker. You don't need to maintain it as much. You can clean it off a heck of a lot easier. When it doesn't bind up because particles don't stick to it as much. So a nickel boron bolt carrier group is extremely good to have, and they use that as a standard item in all their guns. It's got a 10.5-inch barrel, and the trigger is a basic trigger on this particular AR. I've been telling you about those Rock River two-stage triggers that I really like. Well, this one's just your plain Jane trigger. It's got the Phase 5 buffer with the foam, and what's cool about this buffer tube is it's kind of hexagonal in shape, except when it comes down towards the rear, and then it's got the foam pad, so you can put that sucker on your cheek if you want. Makes it kind of comfortable. And it's got the standard flash hider or the bird cage. So what we've got here, once again, Blackjack Firearms AR pistol. This pistol right here will be at the gun show next week, and we're going to have the nice little booth, and you're going to be able to take the weapon, shoot the round, and I'm going to turn it this way so you can see the laser here on this target. So when you go to watch the video, you'll get to see what's going to happen. We're going to be shooting a laser at the target, so you'll be able to see where the weapon shoots and where your shot groups are. Can you see that? Very good. That'll be a lot of fun. Also, I'll have my laser pistols there for all your actual handgun type of shooters. You get to see where your hand placement needs to be on the gun for better accuracy. I've got lots of little tricks of the trade on that, and we can teach you right then and there. And if you like that, you can sign up for further classes, one of my seminars, take a CHL class. We'll go over a lot of that stuff in those classes too. But what you need to do, once again, ladies and gentlemen, go to Blackjack Firearms. I say this every week. He's like a restaurant. He's got a huge freaking menu. On the menu, there's so many things to pick from. He's got main courses, and he's got all these sides. So when you go there, go find your main course, your rifle, your pistol, and then go look at all the sides that he has to offer, whether it's quad rails, magazines, grips, buffered tubes, flip-up sights, red dots, sling adapters, gas blocks, you name it. They pretty much got it. Flash hiders, all sorts of things at bjfirearms.biz. So check them out and make sure you come to the gun show, the Real Gun Show at the Bell County Expo Center on the 19th and the 20th. He'll be there with me at the same booth. We'll be doing a live show at the Bell County Expo Center, Real Gun Show, and you get to put your hands on this gun and many others to see if it's something that you like. Get to talk with John and Steven and get to understand it as compared to just buying a piece of metal that shoots bullets. You get to learn it and understand it and be able to maintain it properly. So Blackjack Firearms, bjfirearms.biz. I didn't get to say this last week. We ran out of time, but I wanted to go over in my gun training demo, and I'm going to take a couple minutes on this, on trigger squeeze. Why is it so important? The reason trigger squeeze is so important is if you have everything perfect, breathing control, hand grip, stance, the whole works, but then you slap the trigger or pull the trigger or anticipate the shot or anticipate the recoil, whatever, the trigger, if you're not, if your finger's not on the trigger right and you slap it and you don't take the slack out of the trigger, the gun's going to go off. So what I'd like to do, I'll show this on video too. First thing we got here is a 1911. I'm going to check to make sure it's clear. Weapons clear, magazines out. We always want to make sure we get the proper grip. I get the proper grip on this gun, but now here's a very important part of the grip that relates to the trigger. If I have a small palm, okay, I don't, I have a large palm, but if I have a small palm and I'm going to be getting a gun that has a double wide grip and my hand's barely making it around the gun and I have short fingers and I decide to get a trigger that's like a double action trigger where it sticks out very far like a revolver trigger, I'm going to have a hard time keeping that gun straight in my hand. I'm going to have to reach for that trigger, and when I go to pull the trigger, I'm probably going to be yanking on it because I just don't have a proper grip. And if I'm yanking on the gun, how the heck can I have a good shot? So if you have a small palm and short fingers, you might want to consider a skinny grip with a very minimal pull on a trigger so that you can wrap around the gun and put your fingertip on the tip of the trigger so that when the bullet goes down the barrel, okay, you want the bullet to go straight down the barrel while your finger comes straight back on the trigger. If the bullet goes straight, I don't want my finger pulling it to the left. I don't want my finger pushing it to the right or anything like that. I want the finger to pull the trigger straight to the rear. Any deviation from straight to the rear causes the gun or the bullet when it leaves the muzzle of the barrel to deviate off its target. And if we all know in geometry, the further out the angle of declination is, I think I said that right, correct me, you mathematicians, but if the angle's off a little bit close, it's not that much of a miss. But the further it goes out, the bigger the miss. So depending on what type of gun you're shooting, what type of threat you're shooting at, and how far it is, depending on how bad you pull the trigger, will determine whether or not you're going to hit your target where you want to hit it, or it's going to be way off, which could potentially cause reckless injury to an innocent third person. You see how this all combines together? So what you want to do is make sure you understand size of your palms, length of your fingers, strength of your hands, double wide grip, single stack grip, single action trigger, double action trigger. There's all these things you need to know before you purchase a handgun. Don't go to some store and the person getting paid $8 an hour says, you're a woman, you need a revolver. Here. Okay? It doesn't work that way. Some women can master automatic pistols like there's no tomorrow. Okay? Others can't. So we have to find out what works best for you. And one of the first things I do is look at the hands. So come sign up a class with me tomorrow, the 13th. We've got a seminar. It goes over all that incredible amount of information. If you have any doubts as to your ability to use a handgun, you need to take this course. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page and you'll see the flyer in the top left-hand corner, or give us a call and we'll sign you up. Okay, enough of that. I'm going to go over an incredible WTF moment here. We've got about 3 minutes left. I'll kill about two of it with this. I saw this and I just had a lump in my throat. I said, way to go, buddy. Awesome WTF. The headline is, late U.S. World War II veteran honored for saving Jews. This is Associated Press. Jerusalem. The Nazi soldiers made their orders very clear. Jewish American prisoners of war were to be separated from their fellow brothers in arms and sent to uncertain fate. But Master Sergeant Roddy Edmonds would have none of that. As the highest-ranking non-commissioned officer held in the German POW camp, he ordered more than 1,000 American captives to step forward with him and brazenly pronounced, "We are all Jews here." He would not waver, even with a pistol to his head, and his captors eventually backed down. Edmonds was captured with thousands of others in the Battle of the Bulge in late 1944 and spent 100 days in captivity. The Wehrmacht was a strict anti-Jew policy, had a strict anti-Jew policy, and segregated Jewish POWs from their non-Jews. On the Eastern Front, captured Jewish soldiers in the Russian army had been sent to extermination camps. At the time of Edmonds' capture, the most infamous Nazi death camps were no longer fully operational, so Jewish American POWs were instead sent to slave labor camps where their chances of survival were low. U.S. soldiers had been warned about the Jewish fighters. Among them would be in danger if captured and were told to destroy dog tags or any other evidence identifying them as Jewish. So when the German camp commander, speaking in English, ordered the Jews to identify themselves, Edmonds knew what was at stake. Turning to the rest of the POWs, he said, "We are not doing that. We are all falling out." With all the camp's inmates defiantly standing in front of their barracks, the German commander turned to Edmonds and said, "They cannot all be Jews," to which Edmonds replied, "We are all Jews here." Then the Nazi officer pressed his pistol to Edmund's head and offered him one last chance. Edmund merely gave him his name, rank, and serial number as required by the Geneva Convention. And then he said, if you're going to shoot, you're going to have to shoot all of us because we know who you are and you'll be tried for war crimes when we win this war. Now, talk about awesome or what? Somebody who stands up and punched that bully in the nose. So, ladies and gentlemen, identify your bullies and figuratively punch him in the nose if you can get away with it figuratively. And if it gets to the point where you have to do something else to defend yourself, you do what you feel is necessary. I cannot make that determination. You must make it at that moment. But don't submit to the bully. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, keep your powder dry. I will talk to you next week, and have a good and blessed day.